Welcome back to Brendan Drives, the podcast where we normally talk about cars while I drive, but I've discovered that the sound quality is so terrible that I can't do that anymore. This will be the last podcast of the year. Oh my gosh, let's get out of 2020. Is anyone else here sick of the year 2020? Let's just leave it behind, like the burning dumpster fire that it is. Hey, today I just want to talk about this idea I had, which is ways to modify your car and enjoy driving for a tactical method of doing that and not go broke in the process. It's with this perspective, I guess you could say, for financial independence. So in thinking about your overall financial well-being and having some fun in the meantime, you know, how do we do this? How do we mash up those two worlds? So we all know the story of the bro who goes out and buys a new car, or relatively new car, for 30 grand. They spend another 30 grand on mods, and it's awesome, and it's unique, and it's powerful, and it's really cool. But then they sell it for 4 or 5 years later for 20 grand. And what's happened is they've effectively lost $40,000 in the process. Now, I'm with you. I think an exciting and unique driving experience is worth a lot. And it's generally not easy to come by that without buying something that's really expensive and is difficult to afford. And so it makes sense to kind of build your own path to that fun driving experience. But in buying those lesser vehicles and modifying them ourselves, we end up spending a lot of money that we don't get back in those modifications because you can't retain the value of those whenever you resell the vehicle. So as a quick precursor, in case you're newer to the podcast and are just finding me now, my experience with modifying cars and driving fun cars is fairly extensive. I mean, compared to someone who's never done that. I started with a first-gen Ford Focus ST, 2005. That car was a manual transmission, a naturally aspirated 2.3 liter, and, you know, it's a commuter car. It's a pretty boring vehicle overall. But I modified it quite a bit and put probably far too much money in it, and used it as a track day car, daily driver and track day car. And it was just so much fun. Absolutely loved it. At the same time, I regret spending that much money on that car, and I don't regret it because those experiences were so unique. I mean, that much money overall over the course of time was probably $4,000 to $5,000. So not a crazy amount, but still a lot. And drove that car at local tracks here in Arizona. I brought it to California, drove a couple different tracks there, and really kind of learned about what it meant to drive well in that car. So it holds a little sweet spot in my life and in my memory. After that, I bought a 1989 Nissan 240SX Coupe, and that car's nickname was the Purple People Eater because it ate up all of my time and money and resources and was by far the worst car I've ever owned. After that, I had driven an S2000 and kind of fell in love with that sort of size and weight of a car, and a convertible was really cool, and so I wanted that kind of experience but didn't really want to pay for an S2000. So I found out that Mazda Speed Miatas exist and bought one of those. 2004 Mazda Speed Miata. It was gray, and I modified that one a little bit after an attempt to drift on a freeway on-ramp. I spun and went off the road and damaged a wheel and a couple other kind of underbody parts. So I had those replaced, but at the same time, I replaced the factory wheels with Enki RPF1s, which are probably the best wheels ever made. I mean, dollar for dollar, pound for pound, the value that you get from an RPF1 is really good. So got new tires, new wheels, did a little bit of heat insulation on the car. And most importantly, because I'm 6'5 and that's an NB Miata, I actually paid to have a race fabrication shop modify the bottom of the floor on the driver's side and the transmission tunnel so I could fit a race seat. Because those stock seats are relatively high, you know, off the floor. And so to get a seat centered in there, you have to cut into the transmission tunnel, mount it as low as possible on fixed rails, not sliders. And then even with all of that done, I actually had to take out the removable pad from that Sparco seat and just sit on the actual steel bottom of that Sparco seat. So it was uncomfortable, but that was one of the most fun cars I've ever had also. I mean, pretty easily up there. Ended up selling that car, but in the meantime, between then and now, I've had actually some of my favorite driving experiences, which I'll get into later, but they involve race cars and go-karts and professional instruction, and man, that's just a great option, so stay tuned for that. Anyway, all that to just say that I'm coming from this kind of same world that potentially you are, which is I want to modify a car, and I want to not go broke. So let's talk about ways we can do that. All right, number one, determine the purpose for your car as soon as possible. Now, I know this isn't the easiest thing in the world to do, but if you can figure out the direction that you want to go and just go in that one direction, you will save a ton of time and money and effort, particularly money. Because I think what happens a lot, and I've seen it a lot, is we start with something that's got great street manners because it's probably stock or almost stock, and then we modify it more and more and more towards some kind of purpose, but we don't really understand what the purpose is, and the thing kind of keeps morphing. And so we all want more performance in general, or more looks, but without a real direction on what the car is supposed to do, we can kind of wander a little bit. You know, is this a street car, like a show car, or is it a race car? You know, is this thing set up to do really well in like a half mile roll race, or is it a drag car? Does it need to hook really well? Is this a time attack car that needs to do road racing? You know, what is the real point of this car? Because autocross is really different than road racing, is really different than drag, is really different than just like a cool cruiser that's comfortable and cool and reliable. So figuring that out is pretty huge. Number two is to stoically, critically, and soberly take a look at your finances. So this doesn't have to be super in-depth, but it's kind of budgeting basics. And that's basically saying, what's my average income? Especially if you have variable income, it's good to take an average. And compare that to your average expenses. And there are other kind of software services that you can use to do this besides like paper or a spreadsheet, but anymore I prefer to use a spreadsheet because I have ultimate control. But just take a look, you know, what are your paychecks looking like on average over the last 3 to 5 months? And then look at your bank statements, your credit card statements, wherever else you spend money, and figure out what your average expenses are and look at the difference. Because if you find out, well, you know, I've only really got $300 a month that isn't really like nailed down, well, your plans are going to be different than somebody who has $3,000 a month that's just not really nailed down that could be potentially, you know, fun money. All right, let's keep moving. Number three, avoid debt. Okay, this one is big. Avoid debt. Avoid debt more than first generation CTSVs. Avoid debt more than a high mileage RX-8 that burns oil that some 19-year-old is trying to sell you. Debt is a killer. And this is probably more about your finances than it is about your car. But in the long term, putting car parts and mods and track days and anything else on a credit card and getting in debt to do those things will cripple you from being able to do more of that later on because you'll be paying off this huge amount of money. So I'm with you that a turbo kit is awesome, but it's not awesome enough to pay Visa 22% interest. You know, they're making a killing off of that and they're hindering your availability for financial independence, for financial well-being in the here and now and long term. I mean, it's really not worth it. So if you don't have the cash to buy the parts, to do the track day, to do the thing you want to do with your car, then don't do it. Cash or nothing. All right, number four, decide on a budget for the car. Don't click off. Keep listening. I know that nobody wants to hear that it's stifling and it's annoying. And I agree with you. It does feel like that. But if you've looked at your overall finances and you've kind of figured out the kind of money that you have available, you've got a plan for the car, the next logical thing to do is to develop a budget. Because if you can kind of forecast, okay, I'll have this car for 3 or 4 years, I've got about this much money free, my budget should be, let's say, $3,500. Then it gives you a ceiling to keep in mind and helps you make better decisions. Because let's just have a pretend example here. Let's say you've got a 2015 FRS or BRZ, you've got one of the twins. And what your overall goal is, what you think would be the most fun, is if the car handled really well because you like driving in the canyons on twisty roads or wherever else that you drive. And specifically, your uncle has a 2007 base model Cayman, and he's just an egomaniac about the car. He's convinced that it is the best car, that basically nothing can keep up with it, and you want to put him in his place. You want to keep up with this guy. So you know your budget, you know your competition, you know your ultimate goal. Don't waste time and money installing new schnazzy LED taillights or side skirts or a really cool like $135 shift knob. You know, those things aren't going to help you towards your goal. Like that's not the point here. Get out there, get online, find some deals on awesome coilovers like KW Variant 1s. Those are the ones I had for my Focus in particular. Love those things. Find some RPF 1s, maybe used online. They're the right size. Get some Pilot Sport 4S's on there. Maybe get some Hawk pads, some Dot 5 fluid. Maybe anything else you can squeeze into the budget there, but that'll probably be most of it. And go out there and keep up with your uncle. You know, maybe invest in a couple of track days through NASA so you can get some actual driver instruction, because ultimately the driver mod is the most important one. And you'll feel so satisfied knowing that you stayed within the limits you set, you didn't go broke, you accomplished your goal, and you pissed off your uncle. I mean, all of that would be so fun. Okay, the next step. Actually stop once you hit the spending limit. I'm already assuming that if you have that spending limit and you have a car that you want to modify, you're going to hit that ceiling. So just keep track, you know, put it on a spreadsheet or put it on a notepad or something that you've got. And as depressing as it might be, just write down those little expenditures. Hey, I spent this much money on this mod on this day. That's it. And once you hit $3,500, you'll have to really reassess and go, you know, did I get a fat raise in between the last time I did this math and now? Did someone die and leave me an inheritance? Did I win the lottery? Like, did something happen to drastically change my financial situation? If so, let's reassess. But if not, that's the limit. You know, you're going to go, I've made this car what I want it to be within a responsible amount of modifying and money and energy expended, and I'm going to stop. And I think you'll be glad overall that you did it. In the moment, you won't. I'm talking to my previous self here. And even now, if I had an awesome car to modify, I'd be talking to myself. In the moment, we won't be happy that we're having to limit ourselves. But I think in hindsight, we'll go, you know what? That was wise. Because putting $20,000 in engine work into a car that's worth $20,000 is actually pretty stupid. But that's a different thing. Okay, number 6. Consider other means of driving passion venting. So if you really love driving and you want to be driving, you know, there are other ways to do that besides having your own car and modifying it and then getting hit with that depreciation and being a financial wreck. I've done this a couple different ways. I rented gas-powered outdoor really awesome racing go-karts with a buddy and with my dad. That was nuts. And then I've rented 2 different race cars, also nuts. So let's talk about the race cars first. The first time I went to Chuckwalla Valley Raceway, and it's this track that's out in California. It's big, long, you know, wide open track. And at the time, they don't have them anymore, as far as I know. But at the time, they had these modified Ford Mustangs that they actually partnered with Ford Performance to modify these and to actually do a little bit of development for Ford Performance through these cars. So they had 4 or 5 of them that the students would drive that are manuals, V8, you know, they're GTs. And then their instructor that day, the guy comes out in a rented, it was a black rented V6 automatic Mustang. And that was his instructor car, because most of his instructing was done with the radios we had in the cars. But the guy, he was faster than us in this rented V6 automatic on like not performance tires, which was so humbling. I mean, the guy was awesome. That experience was so great, and I learned so much from that day. I actually only paid for the half day, and I kick myself even now because I got the deal on a Groupon. So a half a day was supposed to be like $800, and I paid like $400, and then a full day was supposed to be double that. And it's like the amount of actual driving time you get is really good, and the amount of instruction that you can pick up from a professional is awesome. And just that whole experience, it's kind of like a driving year or 2 or 3 condensed into like 1 afternoon. And I would go back, if I could, I would go back and do a full weekend with them, potentially 2 or 3 weekends, because man, you just fast forward your learning curve and you become such a better driver. Plus, like, that had to be a $50,000, $60,000 car by the time you do all the mods, you do all the development work, you buy the car, and it would have cost me $800 for the full day versus $50,000 for that car. And granted, I didn't go home with the car, but I honestly don't want to go home with that car because I just drove the living heck out of it, and I don't want to be hit with the depreciation when I sell it. So that was incredible. I just absolutely love that. And I'm looking out. If you have any ideas of places that do this in the United States, then let me know. Because as a bucket list item, I want to do this at the Nürburgring and at Spa, which are both tracks in Europe, if you don't know. Nürburgring's in Germany and Spa's in Belgium. But they're probably the most famous tracks in the world, and they both have kind of rental services orbiting them because there are enough people that are coming as tourists and wanting to drive on their tracks. But I would love to do this again in the States, especially at places like Road America, Circuit of the Americas, Laguna Seca. All those kind of places are just these iconic racetracks, brilliant, beautifully designed racetracks. And to be able to go there, show up, drive someone else's car that's sorted, you know it works, you don't have to worry about anything, and just focus on the driving. It's so huge. Actually, as I'm saying that, I remember that in LA, there's the Porsche Experience Center. Is that what it's called? PECA? Porsche Experience Center LA. And it's a pretty tight little windy track, but for a few hundred bucks, you can drive a $100,000 Porsche on a racetrack. I mean, that's a pretty awesome thing. I might actually check into that. And I know a guy who works there, kind of. The other thing I did was I drove go-karts, and these were legit go-karts. So my dad, a buddy, and I rented these go-karts, and I want to say it was like $250 a person, something like that. It was still fairly cheap, but you might be hearing me say that and go, Brendan, look, I've done the go-kart thing. I've done it a lot. And if the go-kart thing you're thinking of is like those indoor electric or gas go-karts, it's not, that is not what go-karting is. And I didn't know how different it would be until I went out there and did this. But at those indoor places, what you have is essentially like polished concrete. I mean, it is really, really slick. And so even though the cars are on slick tires, it's almost like they're on glass or the road's like wet because the surface is so polished and so smooth that there's so, so little grip. And I think that's done intentionally. Like, you don't want any Joe Schmo coming in there and being able to go really fast. And so it's really tight. It's really slick. They're not particularly powerful. Like, it's a very limited situation, which is good for safety. And it's still, I'm going to admit, it's still a good place to learn some of the kind of fundamentals of driving. For $25, you can go turn some laps, and it's not a terrible experience. But, and it's a big but, the difference between that and this outdoor driving experience, oh my gosh. So these were kind of like entry-level go-karts, these gas-powered outdoor carts. And they were on not the stickiest tire compound, and they were single speed. So it was kind of like all you have to do is mash the gas or breathe on the brakes, because if you stabbed at the brakes, you'd just lock up the tires. They weren't like full-blown shifter carts with a clutch and the little hand shifter and all that jazz, which would have been far too much. Like, I would have been so overwhelmed. My dad's done that, but I've never done that. But just this was so extreme and like visceral, and it felt so fast and so involving and was like everything you want in a really awesome driving experience, but turned up to like 150% speed and intensity. Because even though it was a relatively small track, I mean, you're on a go-kart. So it was a dedicated go-kart track, and it's appropriately sized for go-karting, but it was almost like I said, like playing a track day in fast forward. Because after we drove those things, everything felt like the world was in slow motion. I was driving a school bus. All the roads were just big, giant, straight or sweeping corners. Like, it was such a very basic downgrade in like what life is requiring of you to drive anything else. These things were unbelievable. And I kind of understand now, like, why racing drivers often come from karting, because you have to be so intentional and precise with everything you do, because it's almost like everything you're doing is amplified. And so you've got to be really intentional and careful with like your steering input, because if you turn in a little bit too hard or too late or whatever, you get understeer or you totally screw up the corner. And it's done in an instant. Like, it feels like that. If you've ever done a track day, it feels like that in a car, but you really have a lot of time to figure that out. Like, you really have maybe 1 or 2 seconds to navigate a typical corner. And in a kart, you don't. I mean, it's got to be like a half a second and then you're through. So that was insane. But the most insane thing was the lateral grip. I mean, the kart itself is responsive and peaky and crazy, but the level of lateral grip those things have is on another level. Like, I was doing my best to learn this track, to learn the line, to learn the kart, to navigate the little bit of lap traffic we had between my dad, my buddy, and I. And I think there was 1 or 2 other people out there. So it's kind of like sensory overload. But I would go hard for maybe 4 or 5 laps, and then my neck would get so tired, I had to ease off. Like, I couldn't keep my neck upright. And I've never been even close to that in any streetcar ever. I mean, not even vaguely close. So that was so intense. It was awesome. Okay, let's keep moving on here. All that to say, I got a little carried away, that there are other ways of venting your driving passion that could be worth it, could cost you a lot less money, and could even be a significantly better experience than driving your own car. And so for some people too, there's another, you know, version of this that you might be thinking of, which is video games. So there are consoles that are getting pretty serious now as far as realism. iRacing is pretty huge. And for the price of like a supercharger kit, you can buy a very legit sim racing rig. So keep that in mind. You know, if you already like racing games, and if you like the idea of being able to drive a lot of different tracks, a lot of different cars, video gaming is relatively affordable. You know, compared to actually modifying a fake car and buying yourself a new CPU or a sim rig or a Fanatec wheel and pedal setup or whatever is pretty affordable. Okay, now we're moving on. The next tip is just to stay in your lane. And that's a proverbial kind of phrase here that's intentionally built around driving, but stay in your lane as far as don't pay attention to what other people think of you, what other people think of your cars, how much attention you're getting online, like if anybody's reposting or liking your Instagram photos, what the trends are as far as, you know, right now the really cool thing is to buy a Supra and put a wide body kit on it and put a big turbo and whatever. Like, just ignore that, because that's not ultimately what makes you the most happy. Like, chasing popularity never makes someone truly happy. It's really just a game of who can spend the most money, who can hire the photographer, who can do all those things that look really cool. But man, what a waste as far as your time and energy. You should do whatever it is that you really like. I mean, if you're bound and determined to like K-swap your old EG and go autocross that thing 3 times a year, that's it. Just do that. You know, it's not particularly cool. It's not sexy. It's not going to get a bunch of Instagram likes, but if that's what you love, go for it. You know, do the thing that you love the most and ignore all the other noise. Okay. Some other potential tips here are, honorable mentions, I'll call them. Now, one of those is to buy a car that needs no modifications. Obviously, that factors into the cheap, fast, reliable equation. It's not going to be cheap. You know, you've either got to downgrade your expectation or upgrade your budget, because buying a 911 GT3 Touring is, I mean, that car's done. You don't need to do anything to it, but you pretty much have to take out a mortgage on the car because it's so frickin' expensive. So just, you know, consider that. If you, instead of, you know, planning on spending $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on mods, look at a car that's $10,000 or $15,000 more expensive now, but it kind of checks all the boxes, like, that could be really great. I mean, if you're going to buy, let's take an example of like a Mustang. If you're going to buy an EcoBoost Mustang, and then you're already looking at big turbo kits, well, consider buying a GT. Like, yes, it's $5,000 or $7,000 or $8,000 more now, but the thing needs no more power. It can make a lot more, but to make 420 wheel is a lot of work in an EcoBoost. It decreases your reliability. It ensures that you're going to lose all the money that you spend on mods. Where if you buy the GT, it's kind of done. I mean, power wise, it's kind of done. So think about that kind of thing. Possibly the most important tip is one that I'll end with here, and that's ignore the sunk cost fallacy. Now, this is something that we all do as humans. We all rationalize more and more spending as we spend more and more, and it becomes this sort of downward spiral of bad decisions. But I think it's especially true for us in the car community because we do things like, well, I'm already this far into this car. You know, I'm 3/4 done with this project. I may as well finish it out. Or I may as well build the motor because this thing doesn't seem like it's working right. The car's already down. I'll just pop the motor out and we'll build it. Or I already blew the motor up. I'm building the motor. I may as well build the transmission. And it's like, it becomes this kind of snowball and is out of control. And I understand the motivation. I'm with you there. I did a version of this when my Focus was down because I had the transmission taken out. I shipped it across the country and it was built by a professional transmission performance guy. I mean, that transmission's called the MTX75. You can look it up. This guy, gosh, if I remember right, his name was Terry Haynes, and he was kind of like the expert. So he did all these coatings on the gears. He inspected stuff. He installed a Quaife limited slip differential. Like, it was very extensive and fairly expensive what he did. And at the same time, I went, well, the car's already in the shop. I may as well do this and this and this and this, and had like this big list of parts to do it. So like, I'm with you in the motivation. I've done that. But at some point, that kind of downward spiral doesn't net us really the proportional gains that the amount of headache, you know, it's generating. Like, if you think about the first few mods you did on your car, they weren't a lot of headache and they gave us a lot of enjoyment. Where now, if you're trying to deal with all these bugs because you've LS swapped your car and you're blowing up diffs and the tune isn't right and the fuel pump is messed up and whatever, like, you've invited a world of complication that may not be worth it as far as the enjoyment you get out of it. So think about that whenever you're tempted to just let the build run wild or let things get really crazy and when it comes to spending money and having that build on itself. Is this really, really going to be worth it? Or do I feel compelled and obligated to keep going because I've spent this much money so far? All right. This has been kind of a long one. It's kind of a weird topic. This was actually a video that I posted on my YouTube channel. My YouTube is Brendan Fitness and Money. And someday I would love to have a YouTube for Brendan Drives for you guys who are listening to this. But that day has not come yet. So I posted this on Brendan Fitness and Money because it has as much probably to do with personal finance as it does with cars and modifying cars, but it's kind of a mashup here. So if you're listening to this and you're kind of thinking, yeah, that's great, Brendan, but what does that mean? If I spend less money on the car, then what? You know, $3,500 and then I'm done. So what? There's a lot that normal people can do to manage their money better, to start saving and investing, to kind of follow a bit of a plan, to A, at least be financially secure so you're not like on the brink of financial destruction, living paycheck to paycheck, have very little money in savings, you know, have nothing invested. You can totally get out of that and be financially secure. But it's amazing how much wealth an average person making an average amount of money can actually build. So it's a relatively slow road. I'm not here advocating any kind of super risky stuff or, you know, stock picking or options trading or anything really crazy. But if you're interested, if you think personal finance is something you want to learn more about, check out my channel, Brendan Fitness and Money. And then also there's some great books and some online resources that are worth it too. You know, I don't have anything to sell, maybe someday, but not today. And I want you to get the most value overall. So if you're looking for quick and easy information, check out Financial Independence on Reddit. If you don't Reddit, you know, you don't know what I'm talking about. But if you are a Reddit user, just look up R, Financial Independence, the letter R. And Financial Independence is really about financial independence and retire early. So that may or may not be kind of the plan for you. But even if you just get to the point where you're really financially secure, I think it's worth it. You know, I think you get to where, hey, I've got some money invested. I've got an emergency fund. I've got a fun car. You know, my life is like pretty well sorted when it comes to money and I'm happy where I'm at. Like, I think that's the place where we should be shooting instead of like, I'm going to make a cool car, damn everything else. You know, nothing else in my life matters but this cool car. And we hemorrhage money and we spend everything we have. ultimately for what? Like, yeah, it's cool. It's cool that you've got a very modified car and it's unique and whatever. But it's not cool to be broke, and it's not cool to have a terrible financial situation for the sake of a slightly cooler car. So keep that in mind. Keep in the back of your mind, in the front of your mind, a 10-year or 15-year financial plan and go, where do I want to be in 15 years? Like, how am I, by modifying my car, helping get me there where I want to be in 15 years by spending $6,000 on this turbo kit? Like, is that going to help me or hurt me? And will I really regret doing this if I don't do it? I mean, you'll wonder, what if? It'd be nice to have another 100 horsepower in anything. But what if you invested that money instead, and in 10 years you had $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 invested? Like, that would be really awesome. So anyway, gone on my soapbox rant for far too long. Thank you for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one. Bye.